Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Juan Manuel Benitez, sitting in for Brian Lehrer today. September came to a close with another distressing cluster of police shootings in Charlotte, Tulsa, and elsewhere. And while these deaths have continued to spark important conversations around race and policing, on the average day in the U.S., 6.75 people are killed by gun violence, mostly not involving police. Most of these shootings never make it beyond the local news, and as a result, generally fail to create a larger national conversation about the daily human toll of gun violence in America. In his new book, Gary Young, columnist for The Guardian and The Nation, and now author of Another Day in the Death of America, has set out to change that and wants us to remember that behind each of those statistics is a real, full person lost. Hi, Gary. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Mara.
Your book is called Another Day in the Death of America and focuses on 10 lives that were ended by gun violence over a 24-hour period in the U.S. However, you write that this is not a book about gun control, but what happens in a country where it does not exist.
What do
you mean by that?
Well, it's every day seven children are shot dead, seven children and teens. This was a random day. On this day, 10 were shot dead. When I say this is not a book about gun control, what I don't do in this book is try and argue about the Second Amendment or argue about background checks or argue about any of that. It's not really about what guns are. It's about what guns do. And so these are what I call the collateral damage, where children are concerned, of gun violence. And they fall all over the country in very different circumstances, at a sleepover, in a stairwell, on a street corner. The youngest is 9, the oldest is 19.
And why did you choose November 23rd, 2013, for the 24-hour period? What was significant about that date?
Nothing. That's the point. If you choose a different day, you get different kids. Just this weekend on October the 1st, 7 children and teens were shot dead. The youngest was 18 months. This is a random day. It was the first day I could do that fitted in with my family life. I'm British, but I lived in America for 12 years as a correspondent for The Guardian. I was living in Chicago at the time. It's the Saturday before Thanksgiving in 2013.
Well, we want to hear also from our callers, from our listeners. If any of you, and I know that this is a really complicated, really hard conversation for many people, if you have lost someone close to you from gun violence, we'd like to honor who they were, while better understanding how they were lost too soon. If you feel comfortable sharing, you can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. If you were close to someone or a family member who was you lost to gun violence, we want to hear your story, his or her story. And Gary, you write that although you were relatively new to the U.S., by the time you started working on the book, you've been in the country long enough to know that things were exponentially worse for black children like your own.
Well, yes. By the time I started writing this book, I'd been in America for 10 years. And in that time, when I came to America initially in 2003 with my American wife, I looked on things anthropologically, really. I was curious about kind of lots of things, and, you know, it was all very interesting. But along the way, I had children. My son is 9. My daughter is now 3. And that just does change your investment in some of these things. It doesn't change my opinion anyway. But as I write in the book, I had skin in the game, and that skin was black skin. And on this day that I chose at random, there were 10 children and teens. Proportionally, it would be about half and half. But on this particular day, 7 of the children and teens who died were black, 2 were Latino, and only 1 was white.
And I'm sure you faced criticism, people saying, well, you're just another European reporter trying to push some sort of European agenda on American citizens.
I mean, that would come later and might come now that I'm promoting the book. But I guess there are a few things I'd say about that. The first is that a book doesn't actually push much of an agenda. What I do is let the stories speak for themselves. But secondly, I have American children. So I have that investment. And thirdly, if someone walks past your house and says your house is on fire, do you say to them, you don't live in my house and therefore you can't talk about my house, or do you try and put the fire out? I'm a human being and I have a right to speak about these issues if I so wish.
Mm-hmm. And in your introduction to the book, you mentioned Sandy Hook. I note that much of the political response to the tragedy misunderstood the problem of gun violence in America. How so?
People are generally sensitized to these issues when there are mass shootings. But the reality is that most of the people who are killed in America by guns aren't killed in mass shootings. Actually, most people, if you take adults as well, who are shot by guns, actually shoot themselves. And so these lives and deaths that I chronicle in this book, they get, most of them get precious little press attention. Beyond their locale. And even in their locale, they may just get 90 or 100 words. And so it's the kind of, I describe it in the book as the white noise that sets sufficiently low that the rest of America can just carry about its business undisturbed. But I think as a pain threshold, it's morally unacceptable.
Let's hear from our listeners. Luis is in Cold Spring, New York. Luis, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Tell us your story.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to relate the story. When I was a child, I was 13 years old. I'm 67 now. I was out in the schoolyard playing, and I was shot in the head. The bullet grazed my head, knocked me out, and I just wanted to say that to this very day, I it's something that's with me pretty much every single day, and I think about it. And I fear for my grandkids. I fear for my loved ones. I'm constantly checking out the roofs because the person who shot me was on a roof. And, you know, so it's been a very it impacts every decision I make when I'm walking in the street pretty much, or when I'm driving in my car. And over the years, throughout the years, every time I've heard of an incident or, you know, it's been the same since nothing has changed in the sense that there's nothing being done to create laws that protect us from these sort of actions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much,
Luis. That's pretty much what I wanted to say, okay?
Thank you so much. We appreciate your call. And Gary, the first person that you profiled in the book is a young boy from Central Ohio named Jaden Dixon. Mm. Tell us a little bit about him.
Jaden is a sweet little kid. He's 9 years old, the youngest boy to get shot that day. He answers the door. His mom says, you know, of a morning, if you're ready, all the way ready, you can play Xbox, you can watch last night's Duck Dynasty, whatever you want. So Jaden's ready, the door rings, and he goes to answer it. And he crouches behind the door like he's going to jump out and say boo. He thinks it's a couple of girls from down the road. But it's not. It's his mother's ex-partner and the father of Jaden's older brother, a guy called Danny Thornton. And Danny, at point-blank range, shoots Jaden in the head, speeds off, shoots another ex-partner who doesn't die, and then is shot himself dead in a Walmart car park. That's Jaden, 9 years old. Mm-hmm.
And most of the children profiled in your book lived in cities and suburbs, and thus their deaths are largely removed from the context of hunting, that it's a huge issue here in this country.
Yes, that's right. There's one child who Tyler Dunn, mm-hmm. in rural Michigan. And interestingly, nobody else in the book, because they're in cities and suburbs, no one else mentions that it's hunting season, that it's deer hunting season. It's only just begun. But in Marlette, Michigan, where Tyler's grown up, everybody's talking about hunting. And Tyler is left with his friend. They're having a sleepover. The father's supposed to stay, but he goes trucking. He's supposed to bring the kids with him, but they say they want to stay home and play Call of Duty. And so he says, okay, you get yourself a pizza, I'll be back at 11. Tyler's 11, his friend is 12. The dad leaves at least one loaded shotgun in the house. Tyler's friend goes to get a milkshake. He shows Tyler the gun. When he comes back with his milkshake, Tyler's giving him the gun. The gun goes off and he shoots Tyler in the head.
Wow. And another one of the people you chose for the book was an 18-year-old teenager from our listening area, Newark, New Jersey. Tell us a little bit about Gary Anderson and what you learned about Newark during your reporting.
One of the things I should say, though, these weren't the kids I chose. These were the kids that died that day. If I picked a different day, it would have been different kids. It was fate chose them. Gary Anderson, he likes to play Xbox. He likes to fix bikes. He's a sweet guy. He's about to graduate and maybe go down to North Carolina and stay with his sister. And his dad, we talk about Newark and just the lack of job opportunities. What you see, what I see as I'm walking around Newark is this hollowed out, economically devastated area in which drugs becomes, you know, one of the few opportunities open to people in a certain area. By far, where Gary died, he went out with his girlfriend to McDonald's, came back home to his mother's place and was shot as he was coming in. It was a case of mistaken identity. They think he was wearing a red hoodie. He had plaits. They think that a rival gang was looking, there was some drug turf warfare. They think that they were looking for a kid with a red hoodie and plaits. They got the wrong kid. He's he's gone.
And we talked about earlier about how you are born and raised in Britain.
Yes.
Do you think it takes an outsider like you to observe or correctly report or try to make the issue understandable to American readers?
I don't think so. I think that, or I would hope not. I don't think so. I think it is true.
Obviously, you bring a different perspective.
I do bring a different perspective because I'm not from here. And so from the get-go, I find this thing difficult to kind of understand. And in the 12 years that I worked here, I struggled to come to grips with it, but was always curious. I went to two NRA conventions. I spoke to lots of people who suffer from gun violence. I mean, these stories are kind of hiding in plain sight, in a sense, and it is certainly true that when you're foreign, and this would be true for an American porter in Britain, the things that people in Britain may take for granted, an American may see and ask, my wife does it all the time. She's American, and she'll say, why do people do it like that? And I'm like, before you asked, I didn't think that was a strange idea. But I think in many ways, all Americans, to some extent, become desensitized to things that happen often. And this 7 kids a day, this happens often. And so if you are working in the media, you don't live in those areas, you don't have friends who live in those areas, it's happening somewhere else over there, then you are less likely to understand this as a crisis, which I think is what it is.
And you picked 10 victims. They're all minors. They're all children or teenagers.
That's right.
But on that day, there were also adults that died by gun violence. Why did you decide to focus only on minors, on children and teenagers?
From a logistical point of view, writing a book about all of the people, that would be 40 people, as it is, this book is 300 pages long. Mm-hmm. But also, there is an issue, of course, of personal responsibility with all of these stories. With all of these stories, you have to look at should the child have done that in this particular moment? Should the parent have done that in that particular moment? There are personal issues. But these are children, and therefore there is also a collective responsibility that we have in society for children, the world that we bring them into. And so children can't be, almost by their nature, can't be held wholly responsible for the situation that they're in.
And in your reporting, do you learn anything that helped you understand the prevalence of an affinity for guns in America?
Certainly, when traveling around the south side of Chicago with people who are trying to interrupt the violence, this notion that you're a young man, you're just trying to walk to your grandmother's who lives across a gang line, and you are constantly threatened by people who are armed, then what do you do? Do you not see your grandmother? Or do you start to carry a firearm so that you can protect yourself? I saw the degree to which in areas which are paradoxically heavily policed but poorly served by the police, people may take a kind of more vigilantist approach to their safety.
Okay, we've been talking to Gary Young. He's a columnist for The Guardian and The Nation, and now the author of Another Day in the Death of America, a great book. Thank you so much. Congratulations for the book for being with us today.
Thanks very much.
Up next, Colombia says no to a peace deal negotiated by its government and the largest guerrilla group. Now what? Stay with us.